Woo, how's everybody, let's check in. How's everybody handling, what are we in right now? Social distancing.
Yeah.
Very social distancing.
Yeah.
Well, Bill and I haven't killed each other yet, so it's all good.
Well, it's different for me because I'm still going to work every day, so I'm not social distancing. I'm going to work every day. Nothing's changed except we don't have customers now. So it's just, yeah, it's weird. Episode proper. So this is Toustonians. It's me and Jorge here. We have two special guests. I'm kicking it to you, Jorge.
I'm sorry. We got our old friends, the scientists, back. You may remember them from Science Time and whatever it was called, Science versus Romance, I think is what I called that episode. And then also from the Science Fiction with Scientists. So since science is the only thing in the news these days, we reached out to our scientist friends just to see how they're doing. And watch a documentary together. So we got today with us Bill and Carolina, friends of the pod. Welcome back, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us again.
Yeah, always happy to be back.
Right on. Happy to have you. So, Joe, go ahead and get us started. Hold on, before we start, hold on. I'm going to just drink down this Espolone. This is today's episode. is powered by Espolone and the drugs they gave me post-surgery. So here we go. Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers. Here's like a good post-apocalyptic drunk. I'm drinking box wine out of a plastic cup.
There you go. Well, I wanted to start with, so I'm still going to work. So you guys are all of you guys are fully quarantined, right?
No, we're not. I don't know how it is. You guys are in New Hampshire, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. So I'm in Massachusetts. We're not on quarantine. I think we are, last I checked, we are at officially no... like public events over 25 are banned. No work meetings of 10 or more, and anything less than that is based on your discretion. So there are not a lot of guidelines. What they're saying is, and this is actually one of the things I want to talk about, but we'll get there, is balancing between trying to live as normal a life as you can, because this might be the rest of the spring, right? And B, not taking undue risks, right? Because and the thing, at least the conversation here, and there's a lot of noise, is we're doing this to be prudent. So be prudent, right? So that's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, live a normal life as much as you can. You know, go to businesses as you can. If you see there's a bunch of people, right before they called it, me and my wife went to a bar. There was like seven people in, like, all right, we're good. This is like the day before they closed, like the day before they announced the no groups over 10, and then like 2 days before they closed all the bars, right? Because we're at bars closed now. And we stayed there. We brought hand sanitizer. We sat away from people. It was fine. As soon as the place got kind of crowded, we're like, let's leave. Let's like rotate out. Let someone else have our seat. So it's just about being prudent. That's what we're trying to do. At least that's the conversation we're having in Massachusetts. What else New Hampshire like?
So New Hampshire pulled something similar. They did, obviously, later, Live Free or Die. But we just, I think on Sunday or Monday, did the whole bars, restaurants closed, takeout only. My school canceled on Friday. But we had already been back from spring break. So our students like were here for a week. They all came back from wherever they were. Came back for a week, and then the college, I think we were the second to last one in New England to announce that we were closing. I mean, we were really, like, there was a population of people being like, we can ride this out. We're probably okay.
We seniors, because that's for us, with seniors, didn't want to cancel.
Yeah.
We pulled the plug like a week ago.
Mm-hmm. Ours was our finance people.
Really?
Because you know, right, these... and we can derail on colleges if we want, but like these kids, you got to ask for your money back, right? Because you paid for room and board.
Yeah.
That's nothing, you know, I don't have that cash.
Our school has already been like, we're running out of deficit. Like, we're going to give them refunds.
Yeah.
And adjust it for whatever we think is fair for moving classes online, whatever the industry rate is. That's part of the math they're doing. But for the most part, they're going to get their, like, the majority of their money back. We're going to lose money this semester.
I think a lot of us are in that boat. We sort of extended our spring break and we're fully rolling out online tomorrow, officially. And yeah, the inquiries are already starting to roll in. If initially they kind of canceled us for 2 weeks, but now it's obvious that that's not going to be enough. So probably till the end of the semester. And so now the families, I think, are really going to be asking for the money back, and it's going to be a big hit. So, I mean, not like a big hit, yay, like a song, but like it's going to be a big financial hit to the college.
And what's that? What's, dare I ask, what is Texas doing?
Well, okay, so I work in the restaurant industry. So Monday night is when they implemented no bars can open and to-go orders only. But so all of our hourly employees have been, they're without work. So they're making the managers still go in. So we're doing like daily things like inventory counts, seeing where we're at, making sure we're getting rid of any food we have left over that's not frozen, things that won't make it. They've given us a 2-week ordinance, but we're all talking. We already know it's probably going to be longer than 2 weeks. So we're not doing to goes. It's really just an empty building with all the managers working so we can still get paid, honestly. And they still can figure out reasons for us to get paid, because we have to run the building at low lighting to keep the lights down and things like that. Other restaurant people here are hurting because I have a lot of friends in the industry. So they've started a petition to Mayor Turner to see if he can do something to help lower the rent that they're going to have to owe. So many of the people we have are, you know, they're relying on tips. They're hourly workers. I'm lucky. I'm a manager. I'm super fortunate. I still get to go to work every day. Yeah, right now, Houston, it's kind of, a lot of people are still saying this isn't that big a deal. A lot of people are still ignoring it. But in my industry, we are hurting. Like, we're like, it took a day, because that's how tipped workers live. They live day to day, honestly. And so some of the kids that work at my place, they've been coming in and trying to fill out for a charity we have, so they can get just a little bit of money to try to make it, because they won't be able to make it. It's scary right now. It's really scary. And everybody's starting to understand it, particularly at my place.
So do you guys have, down there in Texas, it's come up in New Hampshire, mm-hmm. No one's really got it, the idea that the state or the city can pop in and say, all right, you know what? Mortgage payments, rent payments, like those are all on hold.
It's yes. I know they just did that in New York. I think Trump just, or they've done it on state levels in other states. Here, I think we'll be, yes, they have in other states. Like, I think New York was the first one to do it. Like, if you owe the state any money on anything, it is waived for now. Texas will be the last to do it, just because we have Abbott as our governor. I think Turner's more likely to try to do something within his power first. He has his criticisms, because he definitely is funny with his money, but ultimately he makes good decisions in situations like this. I was happy with how he handled Harvey. I think he's done a calling it when he did. Once the other major four cities said that they were shutting things down, he did it that night. Like, he knew he couldn't do it any longer. We closed the rodeo very quickly. Like, the Houston rodeo is huge. We're talking about an event where 2 million people go to this, and this affects large portion of the state. Like, this is a lot of money we sacrifice for this. And we announced that, like, almost immediately, before the NBA quit, before a lot of these things quit.
Yeah.
The city of Houston decided we were going to give up our biggest thing, because that's how serious this was.
It was such a big deal that the rodeo closed. This is not a joke. Maybe this is because of my outsized Texas appearance, but people around me were talking about it. Like, people were like, did you hear about the rodeo being closed? I was like, oh shit, it's real. And you can tell, like, they're not going to do that unless they're going to do it just like kicking and screaming. There's no way they're going to just do that.
And they did it quickly. They did it very quickly.
That's, in fact, to be honest, that's when it hit me. This is like, oh shit. Like, people are willing to give up like millions of and billions of dollars of capital and income and profit to get away from this. And when the NBA hit me, like, I was like, yep, that makes sense, because the rodeo had happened. When the rodeo happened And again, this is maybe I'm just sort of on that wavelength. When the radio happened, I was like, oh, dang.
Well, the Boston Marathon, too. Mm-hmm. And that brings like hundreds of millions of dollars to the area.
That's right.
So, yeah, it's pretty serious.
Yeah, because I saw that was the first time in the 154-year history of it. This is the first time it's been postponed.
I'm not gonna lie. So I got some questions. Is this like I guess I'm curious about how you guys were feeling leading up to this and where you are now, because Joe will tell you I was in a little bit of how seriously do I need to take this? I feel like there's one of these every year. Where, because the news cycle will just pick up on a legitimate outbreak in some other place, get us all scared for 3 days. We're all watching about swine flu or bird flu or Ebola or Zika, and we just glue the TVs and they're selling us ads. And at some point, I grew a sort of callous to it. So when this started, I was like, this ain't shit. And then the rodeo happened, I was like, this might be some shit. And then when the NBA got canceled, I was like, the cure is officially worse than the disease. So what was you guys like? I mean, I'm curious, especially because you guys understand this presumably more than us. You're at least, I know you're both biologists by training, so you must be adjacent to this on some level. Some of the basic science, you must speak to you. A lot of it, I'm just like, sure, that's how that works. I don't understand. Yeah. And so what were you guys at? At what point did this become serious to you? Did I kick in the joke? Because Joe's been on, we don't take the flu seriously enough train for a while now. Which is why I was weirdly excited for him. Fuck, Joe, you were super right.
I'm very not happy about that.
When he's been Mr. We don't take the flu seriously for a while, at least in my head. And I've always been like, Joe, settle down. And now I'm like, fuck, my bad. So at what point did you two realize something was going on? Does your community talk about this stuff ahead of time? Was there any buzz or were you caught blindsided like us? I don't know. I'm just curious.
Do you want to go first, Bill?
Sure. There were two things that caught my eye. I mean, I admit, I didn't think it was going to spread this fast.
Wait, can I pause you there?
Yeah.
Is it spreading this fast, or are we doing this to ensure it doesn't spread that fast, or is it both? Because there's a lot of I'm not clear on.
Well, it's spreading fairly fast. It is, I think part of the thing that scares me, and that's why it's spreading fast, is you can be asymptomatic for a week.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, I haven't come into contact with anybody. Nobody I know is sick, and you are spreading it as you're going. And then 6 days later, you're like, oh man, that feeling a little warm. And in those 6 days, right, I might interact with, especially if I'm teaching 200-300 people.
Yeah, it really made me think about how many people I interact with, within 6 feet a day.
Right. So the asymptomatic thing really scared me, because they talk about Ebola and you're like, well, it's a couple of people said, the flu kills more people. Okay, not at this percentage. Right. It's of cases that are concluded, we're pushing 10%, which is really high.
And with the flu, we have countermeasures.
And then with Ebola, you're like, well, it's, Ebola kills 60%. Ebola's pretty hard to spread. You actually have to, it usually hits healthcare workers the hardest because they're the ones with the direct interaction. So to me, the idea that it spreads like the flu, but you're not symptomatic right away like the flu is. I mean, I started to keep my eye on it, and then I think when it jumped from Iran to Italy, the moment it got to those two, I went, oh, this is going to be here. And I wasn't sure. I mean, I don't know. One of my students was giving me a hard time about it and said, I think it's overblown. And I was like, well, how did your last pandemic go? And this was the day after the WHO called it. And they're like, oh, I don't know. And I was like, yeah, because we haven't had one. It's been 100 years. No one has a memory.
I had a student do that to me. And I said, it was actually not a student. It was a professor. And I said, and I'm the kind of the person who's was slow to get on board. I'll admit it. I'm openly admit I was slow to get on board. Now I'm 100% on board. I am required to be. But I'm on board. But one thing I said to the professor was the last time we didn't listen to scientists, we lost the ice caps. So maybe we just listen to the shit we've been saying forever and just listen to the fucking scientists. I agree. I don't understand. I agree. I'm annoyed by it. I agree that my intuition tells me is that we're overreacting. With that being said, I don't know shit about this. And the last time we didn't know shit about something, well, here we are.
Yeah, I feel I started really following it maybe mid-February. And by the time, because I remember spending some time on coronavirus in my classes before spring break. So right before, right before we went on spring break. But it was during spring break, so during last week when, you know, it really started getting bad. And I'm like, oh, there's no way we're going to go back to school. And it took a while for my college to call it. But I've been, like, since then, and Bill can attest to this, I've been, like, obsessively following the numbers. And I'm, like, just looking at the graphs and, like, comparing countries and, like, looking at the different, like, changing the axes on the graphs and seeing, like, what the curves look like. And man, it's not looking good at all. And part of the problem, of course, is that the numbers that we're seeing, we're not seeing the real spread. We're seeing the tested people, and there's still not a lot of tests in the U.S., so we don't really know. I mean, we might as well assume that almost everybody has it at this point or has been exposed because, yeah, we just, like, the lack of testing is really skewing the numbers.
Do you think that, like, when you see, like, that China has it somewhat under control, right? I mean, I know this is tinfoily, but, like, do you think those numbers are doctored? Like, would China even tell us if they had, like, 10 times as many?
It's a big question. I don't know. I guess the best we can do is just to take them in good faith, I think, because what else are we going to do? I mean, it's already here. We might as well just worry about ourselves. And if nothing else, the numbers from China bring a lot of hope, and from South Korea too.
Yeah, South Korea brings a lot of hope. Yeah.
Yeah. So even as bad as it got in China, if they truly got it under control, then that gives us a reason to be optimistic. So I'm kind of holding on to that. Whether or not those numbers are true, I guess might as well. I mean, it does nobody any good to think otherwise, I think.
That's a fair point. That's just my 90s cynicism rearing its ugly head.
Oh, that's fair.
I mean, you get with, like, the South Korea situation where everybody's like, well, they tested the hell out of everybody and they really overreacted to it. And it's like, yeah, and they're playing basketball again now. So, like, yeah. If the worst thing that comes out of this is, yeah, you know, we overreacted a little bit. Cool.
So,
fine with
so
that.
Yeah. So we were inconvenience things. For a couple of weeks. Oh, shit. Like,
yeah. and speaking of that, and then I want to hear from Joe. Like, so right before this news, it got crazy. Me and my wife went on a cruise. We were on a cruise the first week of March.
Oh.
We're fine. We self-quarantined. Yeah, we're fine. I mean, it's been now over 2 weeks. And neither one of us has shown any symptoms. So if we got it, it wasn't from the boat. Like, right? So,
or you didn't have any symptoms.
Mm-hmm. And right, you spread it to multiple people.
That's interesting. Like, yeah, because that's the thing. Like, you may never develop the symptoms and spread it anyways. Like, that's crazy. Although that would be an interesting way to discover I'm invulnerable. Like, I guess I'm unbreakable now.
Didn't you just say something about a surgery?
Yeah, and then I had a surgery a week later. Oh, that's right. Yeah, and then I had a surgery a week later, a real minor corrective surgery. But at both places, at getting on the boat and getting into the hospital, the screening was essentially a paper version of, do you have coronavirus? And then, like, no, all right, come on in.
Yeah, that's kind of like the forms when you're entering the U.S. Like, do you plan to be a terrorist? And you're like, no. All right.
Wouldn't you love to be an honest terrorist that was like, oh, shit.
I can't lie.
I mean, I wouldn't call them plans. I've got ideas, but I haven't really put it together yet.
Yeah, radicalization isn't something that really gets planned. It just sort of happens.
Conversion software version 7.0. Looking at life through the eyes of a tire hub. Eating seeds is a pastime activity. The toxicity of our city, of our city. Yo, what are you on the world? How are you on disorder? Now, somewhere between the sacred silence and sleep. Somewhere between
designer. Have y'all read about like how it really spread in South Korea with patient 31?
It's legit
one person. So they had 30 test subjects that they had quarantined, and they felt like they had it under control, but there was a 31st patient. And so in the time between they had that person and a positive test, that person ate at a buffet and went to multiple public events.
They count
that person as the one who spread it to the most people.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. But one person is really what started the epidemic.
So that person did not know it?
From what I've read, and I could be wrong, I think they took the test and they knew they could have it, and then they did all this shit before they knew for sure that they had it.
I think they were also experiencing symptoms, the like mild fever or something at the point. Yeah, not cool at all.
No, but that's how serious this is. It's like when I'm seeing all these people partying in Miami, all these people going out to restaurants to spite the libs, like all this shit is just like, it just takes one of you fuckers to kill someone who didn't sign up for this shit. You know what I mean? Like, it just takes one. And that's just like, that's what's so scary about this thing. So for me, I've been terrified since January. I wanted to touch on something you said, Jorge. You said it feels like there's one of these every year. And that is because the health services we have in this country are in the world are so fucking good at when this shit starts, they end this shit. We looked at the documentary, like there are people working their asses off to keep this shit from happening. And this is one of the unfortunate times it got out of hand before they could do it. They could stop it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those you can only lose once, right?
Like, yeah. And this one, but this one is sort of like the perfect one, because I don't know if you remember this, like early, like late, maybe late January, the Atlantic posted that you are likely to get the coronavirus. I tweeted it and you said, fucking Atlantic, you know, you immediately dismissed it because of the Atlantic.
Yeah. Me and I haven't gotten along
but it
for
was 100% correct. Like it was right. It was like, you'll probably get it and you'll probably never have any idea and you'll probably spread it. And that is exactly what happened. And so I know people who are nurses and I know people who work in public health. And I know people who've done like STD testing and like how bad, like what our government does to stop syphilis infections is insane. Like it's a lot. It's crazy. If you ever read up on it, you would be very impressed with what they do to keep syphilis down. And so knowing that always makes me think there's going to be a virus that they can't stop. And this one is just, it just so happened to be it. And I'm very sad because it's fucking, this could last for a year plus is really what the government's looking at right now. Like they have an 18 month timeline right now. And I don't think enough people are like, it's just enough. It infuriates me because not enough people are taking this as seriously as it is. We really need to shut down and quarantine now because this is our best chance to stop it from getting out of hand. If it's not already completely out of hand, we just don't have the data or the testing to back it up.
I have three questions immediately based on what you said. Immediately. One, what you said about owning the libs, I was like, oh my God. Oh, that shit. Like, now you're making that point now. But the second thing I thought immediately was like, this is the perfect crisis for liberal Democrats, because legitimately you can do nothing, and finally doing nothing makes you the moral agent. It's what you've been waiting for. Just get out of the way. The 1% of people who know what's going on can handle this. Just stay out of the way. Perfect. It's perfect. What you said earlier about since January and the 18-month thing and quarantines. So I wanted to bring up a question. I guess I'll bring it to the panel. Right now, the rules, at least in Massachusetts, and it's different for state, but Massachusetts, which has been pretty proactive, I have to say. I don't know how you guys about New Hampshire, but Massachusetts has been pretty proactive. And the rules here are, like I said earlier, no gatherings over 10 and limit those, right? So part of the problem, and then the other problem, is try to live as normal life as you can, because of course all this isolation can become mentally stressful, right? It can become a lot, especially if you're an extrovert. I've seen tons of introvert memes that are like, our time has come. Like, wow, that's super funny. But for extroverts, this is going to be challenging. Like me specifically, like I'm already feeling it. Like I'm already like knowing that I'm like my movement is limited. I'm already sort of like during I always say stir crazy, or like stir stressed, right? So are like four people like little mini gatherings just to get some social interaction still okay? What are the protocols for that, or should we not even engage until, like, part of my reasoning is like, well, we haven't been told we can't do that, so it must be okay in limited capacities, because the actual verbiage, and I've read the California CDC guidelines, I've read the national ones, and I've read the Massachusetts one. I read the California ones because they're having an outbreak, or at least really close by that. And it's all the same. Limit any interactions less than that, but try to live a normal life, which is not very helpful, right?
Yeah.
So it sounds like to me that a fair interpretation of that would be, say, four people want to get together and they all understand the risk and are all practicing good hygiene, that that's acceptable. What do you think? I am partly interpreting the rules to give me what I want. I'm aware of that, but I also don't think that I'm wrong. But what do you guys think? What are you guys practicing? Given that there's probably not a right answer, there's a prudent answer, and then there's the sort of like within the rules answer. What do you guys think?
Yeah. I can take it first. I don't think there's a right answer. I think ideally you would just isolate yourself and be sad forever. But because we're looking at this, we're looking at really long timelines. And I personally find that really disheartening. Like, I think I knew in my heart that this was going to last a while. But when they rolled out the projections for like a year plus, I was like, oh, that's
where'd you see that projection?
Just like this week, they started coming out and some are saying, fall 2021, we can go back to normal, or basically once a vaccine is available, then we're sort of good. But I find that really disheartening. So I think if it's to be sustainable, if people are going to maintain this new normal, there has to be some interaction. And yeah, that might mean adopting some new, no more hugging, kissing, shaking hands, like you might be used to, even maybe with family and stuff, like extended family. But I think we can adjust to that. I think we can adopt some of these like new social norms and maybe be a little more cautious. But I mean, we got to socialize. Like, it's nice. I've been Skyping and Zooming with a lot of people this week, and it's better than nothing, but it's not the same. So, and having said all that, I was at a birthday party last week with like 12 people and all of them shook hands and hugged. And I said nothing and I just went with it because it was just too awkward not to.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we try. I try. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've been staying home. I haven't been at work. I've been trying to do everything remotely. And I mean, it's tough. I really like not having to spend the hour in the car each way, for sure. But Bill and I, we try to go for a walk a couple times a day and just kind of maintain some sort of structure. But yeah, what I think the question is, what's sustainable long term for most people?
Right. Right. That's a good point. Joe, where are you at?
Wait, what was the original question? Sorry. I've been drinking.
I guess the original question, yeah, dude, me too, bro. Like, I've been drinking for like 72 hours. I'm technically still away from work.
Where did we start? Where was the original question?
How do you feel about small gatherings, given that for the moment they haven't been banned, or are you just you're in a situation because you still got to go to work and shit.
I have a small gathering every day. So we have nine managers. And so it's been nine managers working every day at the job. So a couple of times some of the staff will come and they'll fill out the form they need to get money from the charity. But for me, outside of work, that's the only interaction I've been doing. Actually, my sister right now is 9 months pregnant and they're inducing labor next Monday. So my biggest fear is that something happens to her. So like, I haven't been able to have any contact with my sister. My mom's in her 60s and I visit my mom every weekend. Jorge knows this. Like, I do a good job to visit her. I told her I can't visit her anymore because I am acting as they say we should. I'm acting like I've already had it. I've already had contact or I currently have it. So everything I do is in I'm acting that way. So I limit my hand touches at work. I'm not visiting my family because they are at the most at risk right now. And so I've limited interaction with friends. Like, I've been invited to hang out a couple of times, but I'm not doing it. I'd rather play it safe on this because I know how serious this is. And the only reason I'm going to work is because I have to, because I like a lot of people, I have money saved, but I'm still living paycheck to paycheck, and my right. money saved ain't going to last me long enough. So I'm having to go to work, and that's really the only reason I haven't completely shut it down and not left my house, except, you know, to take a walk and like get some exercise and things like that, just so I don't go stir crazy. Because I've been on bed rest for months on a time when I had my car accident. I know what it's like to be stuck in the house for months on end, and it breaks you mentally. You lose track of time. You don't know what is going on. Like, it fucks you. So you got to get out and do things. And humans are just social animals. We need human contact, especially like, you two are fortunate. You two have each other. There are a lot of people who don't. Like, I live by myself. So if I wasn't going to work, I'd probably already be losing it. You know what I mean?
I'm thinking about how many babies are we going to have that we would not have had because of coronavirus. How many marriages are we going to have because we wouldn't have had because of coronavirus? And how many divorces are we going to get because of coronavirus?
We're going to be the old babies.
Yeah. Bill, where are you at with this? What's going on with you?
So I think one of the things that Caroline and I have, in addition to what Joe said, is we live in the woods. So we can go. I mean, we go for a 20-30 minute walk on a trail. You get outside, you get the air. You might not see anybody. I also have to go to work twice a week because I've got the live animals. So even if the college closes us down, like, there are snakes in there. No one else is going to come take care of them. Like, that's on me. But I think, like, you can do things, again, because we live in the woods. Like, we could invite our neighbors up to have a fire. Going to keep that distance because, you know, our neighbors are not only immunocompromised themselves, but they also have a lot of older family who are compromised. You stay on that side of the fire, I'll stay on mine, but we can still like chat and whatnot. I've also been, because I really had a hard time when they sent our students home because I had a couple of kids who are seniors. This is they, you know, all the ceremonies are coming up. This is not how this is supposed to end. And so I basically sent an email out that was like, listen, you know, I'm not giving you my cell phone number because I love you guys, but maybe not that much. but like, here's my Skype, here's my Google Hangouts thing. If you want to chat, I'm still working. You know, I'm up, I'm around. If you want a video, you want audio, you want to just text, we're good. And I've had a lot of them just kind of shooting me messages during the day, like, I'm sick of my siblings already. Sorry, can't help you. So I've been doing a lot of that stuff. I think as long as you're careful, like, you want to go to a party with six people, go for it. But pay attention, like, grab something off the counter, wash your hands, you know, keep that 6 feet of distance. I think that's going to be big.
Fires, loud neighbors, flashlight reveries caught in the headlights of a truck, eating seeds as a pastime activity, the toxicity of our city, of our city.
Transition to the pandemic documentary.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Yeah, this is getting kind of depressing. Like, we're all talking how lonely we are.
I got, as usual, lots of things I want to say about it. So for those of you who don't know, there is a Netflix documentary right now called Pandemic that was released at the end of January that does not, I don't remember if it was the end of January or early February. I looked it up, but I'm forgetting. That discovered or predicted everything that's happening now. It's all about, like, we are just, you know, a thin gauze against a coming storm, right? And we have to figure out what our global system for fighting a pandemic is, because the next pandemic is coming. It's guaranteed to be here. And then boom, a month after release, we are here. It doesn't, for those of you at home, it doesn't talk about Corona at all, because it doesn't know that's what it's going to be. It's actually talking about the flu, and Corona is not the flu. It's a different creature, virus. But when I was watching it, I was like, holy shit. Like, this thing totally calls its shot. Like, wow. It 100% predicted what was going to happen just a month later. And obviously, it's filmed over time, right? So this must have been started filming in the fall of 19 or something. So back then they knew. And then they just happened to get it out in time. So timely that I thought, like, wouldn't it be amazing if Netflix somehow engineered the coronavirus to go with this documentary? And then they were like, viral marketing, you know?
Pun intended.
But what did you guys think of the documentary? You know, what were your thoughts? I asked you guys to do it for homework. Like, where are you guys on it?
I forgot about anti-vaxxers for the last couple of weeks, and then on episode 2 they reared their ugly heads again, and I was like, son of a bitch, I cannot believe.
Oh, I forgot all about them too. That's a great way to put it. I forgot about these jokers.
And like, what are those people doing? Like, I imagine getting sick, but...
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They do a good job of saying how wrong they are. especially by the end, they dedicate the most closing lines with how wrong they are. Like, I thought they knew they had to do that at the end.
But they still do give them a lot of, you know, screen time. But I actually... That was my favorite part. I will say the anti-vaxxer part, because it's like, it riles you up. It's, there was like a good, it was good storytelling to like put this antagonist in how firmly they believe in their cause and how invested in they are. And then how outrageously they ignore the mothers with the kids, you know, that have cancer and that can't even be there.
They only got
right?
that one little scene. Yeah. I thought that was kind of like they needed more of a voice in the thing.
Yeah. And, but I felt like it was well put together to like upset you as a viewer. And so I got to say the anti-vaxxer parts were my favorite parts.
I also had Bill's reaction, like, oh, these motherfuckers, like, y'all are alive. First of all, I was like, you guys still around. Yeah. Measles would have taken care of you motherfuckers.
So but, I know the anti-vaxxers and I associate with them. Like, so it's more normal in my life than I think it's in yours.
I have met, how can I describe them? I have met, what's one step back from anti-vaxxers? Like, so here's what I said about the vaxxer that I met. And it was not the sort of like overprivileged white lady on the beach that we saw in the thing, but I do want to talk about her. And the way he described it, this is the closest thing to lucid or an anti-vax thing that I've ever heard. He said, couple things. One, and this is at the time, I don't know how true this is, but I was like, if that's true, this is a reasonable opinion, is it's not the vaccine itself, it's the delivery system, and they don't tell you what's in the cocktail that goes into injecting it, and he didn't like that. But what he also said is, look, I was vaccinated, I'm obviously fine. So I went and got my vaccination records, my kids got all the same vaccinations I did, and that's it. Because obviously this is enough. I was like, sure, I don't really care about this enough, because back then I was like, I don't have kids, I'm never gonna. That seemed the closest thing to reasonable I've ever heard. But at the same time, he's not turning down all vaccines. He's just turning down like new ones because he doesn't trust Big Pharma. And the sort of Big Pharma distrust resonates with me. But I don't know. What do you guys think when you hear that? That's the only time I've ever heard, like, I'm almost willing to entertain you.
Nah.
I mean, to me, that's like,
nah, fuck that.
I only drive cars without seatbelts because they were fine for my grandpa.
Oh, boom! Nice. That's a good way to put it.
Right? Like, I don't trust them. They're new, and we were fine before them. Like, okay, enjoy your trip through the windshield. Like, that doesn't. That's still stupid.
Yeah.
No, that's a fair point. Like, I I wish I could. I wish I had cared enough and thought about that 7 years ago when I met this guy. I just remember that conversation.
Well, and that very logic points at like not understanding how vaccines work and how these pathogens work, because now we have new ones and we have better ways of delivering the vaccines. Like, you don't want to keep doing the old shit because some of it might not work. Like, you have to get a flu shot every year because last year's doesn't work anymore. Like, we're adjusting as we learn more and as also these pathogens keep changing. So yeah,
that's a great point. And I thought of like two things when you said that. The first one was actually going back to coronavirus and how coronavirus incubates for like a week before it shows itself. And sometimes when people talk about evolution, they talk about it as if, like, they'll say it evolved this defense mechanism, which makes it the agent. Like, it implies that it chose to create this thing for itself, which is just poor packaging of what's actually happening. It's adapting to its circumstances, and the defense mechanism is just arising naturally as a response to the environment. Correct? Is that right? That's right, right?
Yep.
I got that right?
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Do you want a word from an evolutionary biologist on that?
Yes, please.
So fundamentally, mutations are random. Natural selection selects from those random mutations those that fit the current situation best, like are the best fit for the current situation for the hosts to fool the host's immune system or something like that. So it's an arms race between the host and the pathogen. And so they're both constantly co-evolving in response to each other.
That's more fun to think about because it's like, I don't know, try this. And he's off.
yeah, exactly. It's random.
And what I love, but I love the idea of coronavirus deliberately like evolving a specific mechanism, which I know is not how it works, because the idea of like, no, let's just get them sick, but give them no symptoms so they don't think they're sick, because these arrogant motherfuckers are just going to do nothing. That I love the brilliance of that. If that's the real choice they made, obviously it's not, but that's just love that I want to believe that somehow coronavirus has a hive mind and they all agreed to do this. Like, Steve, no, hold back. We're not revealing ourselves until it's too late. Like, hold back. Like, I love that idea. And I don't even remember what my third point was.
It's all Monty Burns, just like everybody's sitting there doing this, and I'll release the hounds.
Or the moment. Or the insect on
Family Guy.
Good. But go back to the anti-vaxxers. I do have another kind of a question, I guess a response. So for me, there's a certain like social libertarian impulse to it that I'm like, this makes me want to hear you out. This idea is like, you can't mandate what I put in myself. Like I'm forced to agree with that because that's my ethos. And I've actually been waiting for like, I can't think of something that would make me disagree with this ever. Where like I can just opt out of anything you say I have to do with my body, whether it be like, and I'm with that in like all forms. Like I think the person is the ultimate agent of their own property. In a capitalist system, your body is your property. It's usually the thing you sell, so you should have 100% control over it. This really challenges that belief for me, right? Because on the one hand, I'm like, okay, you can do that. However, you then have to accept the social segregation that comes with it. Because that's the part that infuriated me. Go live over there, then. Go quarantine. Social distance yourself if you want to live that life, but you're not allowed to participate in society because we've decided that this is the baseline for entry. So if they're allowed to segregate themselves, then I'm sort of forced to acknowledge that not vaccinating is a valid choice based on my libertarian-leaning politics. However, then asking for them to use social services is fucking bullshit. Like, you don't get to go to public school. Fuck you. Like, my kid chose to do the opposite. You don't get, your presence undermines that choice.
But here's the funny thing. Well, here's the funny thing about that lady. She homeschooled all five of her children.
Right. Right. What did she want? I don't even know what she was fighting for. For a right she's not even going to use? There was a moment where I thought, like, man, how is this the height of privilege? Like,
oh, do you remember how they said, like, we are healthy because of our healthy life choices. Like these kids like gave themselves cancers, and so now it's like their fault, or they're like too lazy to make themselves a kale smoothie every day or something. Like I don't know what the hell that even was supposed to mean.
That's a hell of a way of learning the stove is hot. Like, well, just the cancer is bad.
It just feels like the natural evolution of American exceptionalism. Like,
I like how you use evolution there.
Well, I mean, yeah, but like, this is the American mindset. I am better, so therefore I'm better than everybody. Like, you know, it's the same shit. It's why people are fucking going to the beach for Corona. Like, when I watch the whole time I'm watching the anti-vax lady, I'm thinking about the people who aren't taking this seriously enough. Because ultimately, they wouldn't consider themselves anti-vaxxers, but they have the exact same mindset. Nothing bad can happen to me because I am better. I just assume I am better with no proof. And so nothing bad can ever happen to me. And the mindset of that is because nothing bad has really happened to us in a while. And if it does happen to us, we're so far removed from it. Like, 9/11 affected a lot of people, but it didn't affect me the same way it affected someone who lived in New York. So, like, that's really the major thing that happened. This is literally affecting all of us. There's so many people who aren't affected by so many things. And so, yeah, that lady didn't vaccinate her 5 kids, and she's been lucky they haven't gotten the measles. But she will think that is her genetic superiority when really she's probably just lucky.
Yeah. I have always said the highest marker of privilege is the opinion that I don't have to respect anybody else, whether that be opinions, rights, or anything like value, commentary, voice, anything. I don't have to respect anybody else says, but everyone has to respect my boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. That's the ultimate marker of privilege. And that's it, right? I don't have to respect anybody else's need to not get coronavirus and accidentally kill someone they love. I want to go to spring break. I don't need to, and you have to respect that. I don't need to respect that I have convinced myself that vaccinations are poison and that I don't need to use them. And however, you have to respect my right to disrupt your choice because yours matters less than mine. Like, that's the ultimate marker of privilege. And then that she won was the ultimate proof of that privilege. That privilege isn't an attitude, but it's a reality. Like, that's what I thought when I watched that.
Well, I think, hey, we saw 5 kids. She might have started with 8. We don't know. right? She has 8
Very
or 9.
Possible.
and I think it's somewhere between what you said, Joe, and what you said, Jorge, where it's like, yes, I'm better, and it's about, like, the problem is we're also never taught at any point, you know, at least in my public schooling, that it's not about me, right? It's always been, you can do whatever you want, you can do this, and part of the vaccination thing is not just, oh, well, you won't get it. No, it's not about you, right? I don't want to have to pay my taxes to help these other, it's not about you, right? And we're never taught that. Right. We're always taught, and I think it leans a little bit more on that privilege side of, yeah, but what about me? Like, I already pretty much socially isolate because I live in the woods. I like it. Well,
I'm jealous, honestly.
Yeah. But they closed my brewery. I am feeling for my brewery right now. But it's not about me. And I think the moment you can get a lot of that out of the way, right, all those spring breakers in Florida that they have to show every day just upset me. Right? Yeah, they're doing that to upset me. It's not about, like, I don't care you're having a good time. It's not about you. Florida's got millions of old people. They're all going to die. Because it had to be about you.
Yeah. And it's a little bit of FOMA to that, too. Like, the fear of missing out. Like, because I work with a lot of kids in high school, and their graduations are canceled. And I feel really bad for them, because that's like a special moment in their life. Like, that's like you're an adult now kind of ceremony, and like they've lost it. Like, their proms are canceled, and I feel for them. It's the adult assholes who are doing the bad thing, though. Like, these teenagers, like, they're sacrificing something that they didn't know they were going to have to sacrifice. And then there's just these 20-year-olds going to fucking party in fucking Miami.
Yeah.
And just don't care. It's like, man, you can do that next year. And maybe when you're under 25, you're still so full of hormones you can't think correctly. But there's older people doing this. Like, somebody I work with was like, yeah, we're going to the beach house, we're just gonna go to the beach and kill time. It's like, man, you're 40, you should fucking know better.
Yeah. No, and I think that there's a lot to say about the value attached to those specific acts too, right? Like, with, I feel the same way for seniors who aren't going to get their commencements. I'm like, man, we've been building you to this moment, and it just got fucking jacked from you. And especially on some level, there's this, like, and also This is a sacrifice you're making for someone else, not for yourself at all, because what we know about coronavirus is that your demographic is probably fine, right? So it has been ripped away from you by circumstance, just by the world. Like, I'm very sorry this happened. And then there's the people who've been told their whole lives that like, spring break is fun. Like, come on, man. Like, you can wait till next year. Like, it's not going nowhere. Like, it's just, yeah. And then, for me, though, and I want to talk a little bit about this and also dovetail this back into the documentary, is that what you said, Bill, how they keep showing us these people, a lot of that is media narrative looking for opportunities to cluck their tongues and cross their arms, and then they put them up on TV, and that's what they want. Like, what are we going to learn to stop validating behavior with attention for teenagers? Like, even, like, we all know that. Like, we all know that the last thing you want to do to someone who's being needlessly defiant is give them a microphone. Like, what are you doing? Just let them do that on their own. Put out a press release, by the way, this piece is full of assholes, don't go there today, and then just we move on. Like, but no, we elevate them to the sort of level of, like you said, antagonists, which just feeds into the ego. So there's a part of us that just needs to, like, I just accept that there's going to be some pricks and do our best to minimize them in every way. Interesting about the documentary was it opens with, like, you need a narrative, you need for a narrative, and I thought that was a real interesting thing. So I want to talk about the documentary as a documentary, right? How did you feel about it as a piece of, I don't know, entertainment documentary? What is the story you think it's telling? Who is the protagonist of that story, if you want to go that deep? Well, how did you feel about it as a constructed piece of narrative, not just based on the pathos of its subject matter, because the subject matter is obviously the defining moment of our times right now. But what do you think about it just as a documentary?
I wasn't into it, if I'm to be honest. I really, like, there were things that pulled me in, obviously the anti-vaxxers, and then I think Bill might relate to this, the whole, are they going to get funded or are they not going to get funded for their project? Like, that was, you know, I was watching with sort of anticipation. But other than that, I was just kind of like, yeah, a lot of things suck and a lot of people are working themselves to death over it. And that's sad. But that was kind of it. I don't know. Yeah, I really didn't get into it that much.
What about you, Bill?
Well, from a way that I guess I, from as an observer, I liked the chapter setup. I liked it, but I wanted each episode to focus on one person. The doctor running the New York pandemic preparation force. I wanted the whole thing about her for that one episode. The 2-3 Indian doctors and the story about here's the flu peaking and here's them treating it and dealing with it, you know, combining with all of those sort of social observations about India. I wanted that as an episode. And then the one guy who's, like, traveling around looking at avian flu, like, we just got 30 seconds of him randomly.
Yeah, that was weird.
It never went anywhere.
No, so yeah. I wanted more of that. I didn't want to keep hopping around, like, yeah, the guy's trying to build the vaccine. Give me that episode. I want that whole hour about them. I actually felt kind of Games of Thrones-y there for a little bit, where I was just like, all right, who are you again? Like, why? what was so important about you? And so I felt like in that way, as a viewer, I had a hard time with that. Like, I think you could have compelled me with, start with the people in India who are fighting the flu in real time. Watch the people live, you watch them die. Then you talk about the vaccine, and then you talk about New York City, and then you talk about pandemic. Like, you could run through it that way, and at least then I think that narrative works for me first.
Yeah. I didn't like it. I thought, like, everything you guys have said are pretty much what I wrote in my notes. Like, I felt it had no narrative focus. I felt it was hard to, keep track of the stories. Some stories were made more interesting to me than others, and it felt like they definitely should have just been a whole episode. I also didn't – so for me, when I look at a documentary, you can go two ways. It can be a character study or it can be straight, news, you're giving me information. This one couldn't – it didn't really pick. Like, they had these weird scenes where they're doing, clearly reality show TV kind of things where, they – they're sitting in the car while the lady gets out of the car and they're filming her do it. And they stage these really awkward conversations that don't feel natural at all. It just felt very staged when it was couldn't this person just tell me this? Because if you're doing a character study, they're not even following the most interesting characters. Those are the patients, or the doctors in India. I thought that should be one documentary, or the nurse, nurse in Texas, the one who's at the border, that should be its own thing. The one doctor in Oklahoma, that should be its own thing. It just kind of felt like five documentaries pushed together, and then they hit shuffle on which one we saw, because they had titles to episodes, but I never got a narrative theme that each episode was telling me about this thing. It just, and if I hadn't have binged it, because I watched it in two nights, I watched three and then three. If I hadn't watched it that way, if I watched this once a week, I'd have been lost. I wouldn't have been able to know what we were watching. I thought it failed to try to accomplish what it was looking to do, but I could fill in the gaps because I know people who work in these things. So for me, it was confirmation for things that I knew, but as a documentary, I wasn't a fan.
Oh, you've been for the last 2 months, the Captain Holt vindication meme. Vindication! Joe's been blowing this horn for a while. So I have a lot of the same critiques. So I'm going to take a step back and talk about just Netflix documentaries as a genre. First of all, they're designed to be binged. There's a sort of thematic arc. I was tracking okay, there's a story here, but because the story is disjointed, and maybe this is because I study narrative so much, the characters aren't the story you're telling me. It must be sort of an intellectual narrative. An idea is the hero. It's almost functions like an allegory, but with real people. And they all follow a similar trajectory. There's a high and a low, and then they all end on these sort of rising action, the sort of call to hope, the sort of because they're all kind of very traditional hero narratives. Because the doctors are all heroes, right? They're all martyrs. They all cross a threshold. Some of them fail. There's a lot of kind of traditional structure hidden within the characters like that. But that being said, though, when I watch the documentary, I kind of want to learn something. And the only thing I learned is to be scared or to feel admiration. That's it. Because this is this is true about the one we reviewed last year, Joe, with the yoga people in Oregon.
The wild country.
Wild country. This is also true about Aaron Hernandez. Although Aaron Hernandez, I learned a little bit more science. But I'm not learning anything. I don't know. I have no conversant legibility in the language of pandemics other than, fuck, dude, be scared because, this shit could happen. I was just always asked to either feel tremor or sort of, pride in this other person. So, and this is true of most Netflix documentaries. The narratives are all grounded in pathos, right? This is important, right? But they're all, they're all grounded in ethos. This is important, right? The ethos here is to create a medicine that can help everyone, right? That's the sort of ethos at all. And we got to stop this. We got to stop pandemics. It's always expressed exclusively in pathos and emotional terms, right? Fear or pride. That's it. Those are the only emotions that ever ask you to feel. And because of that, I don't learn anything. I wonder if because of the sort of nature of this specific thing, that maybe some fear and some pride are good emotions. I wonder who this is for. We're all fairly in tune already. In many ways, as a narrative, this falls into one of the worst traps. Is it's telling me there's a problem, but not telling me a solution. So what am I going to do? Right? How am I supposed to do that?
There's really no call to action at the end of it. No. A good documentary, they give you something fuck, okay, I have a something to fight for. They don't give you that, really. She gets her funding. They maybe, they're doing another test. We get the hope, but we don't get a call to action. It felt like that's the only – it was really missing that, a call to action at the end of it.
Yeah, because it felt like the call to action was like, money would fix this. I'm like, dude, I'm American. I don't have any money. I don't have any money, and I'm already giving medicine tons of my money. Like, I can't, I got nothing more. Like, I hope it works out. Like, I don't know. Let me know. Give me the sort of like pandemic two. Turns out it's fine. Turns out we have plenty of money. Or B, turns out all that money is held by people who don't give a shit. The rest of us die. Like, I don't know what we go from here. And there was even that moment where early on they said, like, economics, legislation, and science have to come together. And this is the part that frustrated me. We didn't talk about those other two things at all. Right? Like, they had that amazing moment where India was going door to door, like, scanning fevers. Right? I was like, whoa. What? How nice it is to have a public health system. Not even Medicare for All. Just a uniform system where every hospital follows the same rules and procedures. It has the same levels of databases and systems so they can just send each other shit and coordinate immediately. Like, just that. Like, we don't even have a universal private system, you know? I don't know. Like, that's, but they, I thought the documentary failed to actually talk about those things, to talk about the border crisis and the sort of policies that led to that and how these policies that are based on racism and xenophobia are creating these potential petri dishes. Instead, it was like, oh, look, Latinos, we're all sad, right? Because Latinos. Man.
Yeah, I feel like they very politely kind of left out the elephant in the room, which was the United States healthcare system, which is like so fucked. It's like so obviously fucked and so obviously ill-prepared for anything like this. And yeah, they didn't talk about that at all, or like the costs to patients and like why patients here are less likely to come forward and even get tested because they're worried how much that's going to cost them. And like none of that was addressed. And I was like, well, are they just trying to, is it too big of a topic to include? Or yeah, I wondered why that was left out. It seemed like a missed opportunity that was sort of really obvious.
I thought that was the story they were trying to tell with the doctor in Oklahoma, but that story was just, man, this sucks for her and she quit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they hired two people to replace her. Like, well, if you had done that at the start.
Yeah. Couldn't they have just hired one more person and she could have stayed? Like, I didn't get that whole.
Yeah. And the whole thing was based on like approving a tax. Like, if this tax approval keep our hospital, like, you shouldn't have to do that. There should they like that never entered it at all. Like, you shouldn't have to do that even a little bit.
Or like, go home with the workers who are like, the guy had the flu and he can't miss work. So what's this guy gonna do? Like, all the more interesting stories are just kind of a scene and then it's over.
Like, the one that killed me was the prisoner who had the flu and he was gonna die because he couldn't afford treatment. And I was like, they didn't even come back to that. They just included me. It's like, it's an easy path. I was like, oh, isn't it sad? This old man's going to die. And then they never returned to it.
Oh, yeah. Like, the sheriff said something like, oh, and sometimes I pay my own money to fill up our cars. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so there's a lot of like hero narrative that's really like thrown around really responsibly. Like, oh, man, what a hero. Willing to pay his own money. He's like, you greedy bitch. You fucking, like, you know, you respond to that. You were emotionally cued to respond to that, like, wow, what a sacrifice. But you, as a viewer, should be like, you're sitting here fucking with your dick in your hand and a box of Nutella, and you could not have eaten that Nutella today and just given him the $5. And we, first of all, we shouldn't have to do that anyway, which is the reason we don't have any of the shit we need, because always what we're with Americans is like, it's going to cost you $10. And you already have it. It's going to cost you $10 so your friends can have it. Well, fuck them.
Yeah, I think when they were doing the part in India, was not only, you know, they were scanning heads. They scanned them and then went, Tamiflu, here you go.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Yeah, they were handing out shit.
What? Mm-hmm. Like, Tamiflu costs like, I think, $30-$35.
Yeah, it's not cheap. Us. Last time I had it, it was like $100 I had to pay out of pocket for it.
No. It's cheap.
Yeah.
Fucking us. It's clearly price cheap.
Yeah.
India was giving it away. That's how cheap it is. India just had fucking, they didn't even have it like in nice carts. It was like a grocery bag of Tamiflu.
Yeah.
It was just like, here's some Tamiflu. They weren't even, there was no like, they clearly hadn't counted them out. They had so much. It just dumped it into a paper bag and like, here, just take 10 bowls of Tamiflu. Here, just take this until you're not sick anymore.
Trick or treat, Tamiflu. Like, here you go. Just going door to door with that. It was unbelievable. Yeah, and then you see that they, especially with the Oklahoma situation where they show you like drone shots of the hospital, and you're like, she's the only doctor, and you're like, that thing's got like what? There's that's a huge building. This isn't a clinic down the road. Oh, she's ending her 72-hour shift, and you catch her husband. And he's like draped in the recliner. You're like, I live here during that time. You're like, what the fuck is going on?
In the final crawl, they did one of those drone shots that you're talking about, and it had the crawl on there. It said 100 closed hospitals in rural areas in this country last year, 700 are threatened. And I'm like, are you not going to say that Medicare for All would fix that? Like, there's a solution to your problem on the table. Like, there's a reason you only have that statistic for this country. Like, you're not doing that stat for India or Guatemala. Like, you're just doing it for us. We're the only fucking suckers who can't keep hospitals open because they've convinced us that's bad for us. Like, what the hell, dude? And that documentary did nothing to touch on that.
No.
I felt like though they did spend, maybe that's just me, maybe I just like, it rubbed me the wrong way, because I felt like they did spend a lot of time on developing the religious side of some of the characters.
Yes.
And I was just like, fucking why? Okay, you have to be a literal martyr to be a doctor in rural Oklahoma.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, in the last episode, the guy who's the son of the man that the Indian doctor saves, who was there for 22 days, he calls him God incarnate.
Yeah. The incarnation of God.
They should have named that episode God incarnate. That last one.
Right? And like, but like you said, Carolina, there was a moment where I was like, where she's like, hey, I'm atheist and I just want the same respect that I would give you. And her mom is like, but I'm your mom. I'm like, fuck you, bitch. And then I was like, wait a minute. Then I was like, why are we here? Like, why are we talking about this?
Maybe the filmmakers realized that a pandemic was going to kill us all. And so they had this religious awakening and they're like, look, the only thing that can stop this is prayer. We give up. Here's what we got. Pray to your God.
Get right with God, bitches, because that's all you got left. I have one last thought.
Okay.
There's a scene in there. Oh, I should have looked this number up. Someone want to look this number up for me on your computer. How many ducks in the world?
How many ducks in the world?
All right, I'm on this.
All right, so I'll talk while you guys are looking at the number, and you can just tell me the number when you find it.
So it's almost 50 million.
It's 50 million. Yeah. Okay, good. So when there's that scene in the middle of it where there's that one of those random narratives you just picked up and dropped about the people who go into the field and swab all the ducks to see what they're dealing with, and they just have this net and they catch all these ducks, take the duck, and like, oh, the hunters are respecting animals and they're swabbing the ducks. So they swab them in the throat and they swab them in the butt, right?
Yeah, in the cloaca.
Right. So then I thought, like, so I had two thoughts, and then I'm going to take us one step back before I finish the story. In science fiction, I teach a lot about, like, this isn't funny the way we imagine a future, isn't a way the past imagine a future, and isn't it fun to think about how we laugh at the past for the shit they got wrong or the shit they didn't realize was stupid, and who's going to be laughing at us for the shit we didn't realize was stupid. So one thing I always do is Spanish flu, because like, these dumb motherfuckers didn't know about germs. They weren't even wiping down tables. Could you imagine if you had surgery and the other dude's piss and blood was still there? Like, it's probably fine. It's been 30 minutes. Like, that was the rule. And some situations would be like, you know what? You might have too much blood. And then they would just leech your blood. That's what they responded to the Spanish flu with. You might have too much blood. Let's get rid of some of your gross blood so your body can make fresh blood. It's just stupid, right? And then I think, what is the 100 years from now going to laugh at us for being stupid? And the thing I always think about is fucking ear pods. because like it's just a microwave going through your brain. Like there was gonna be like these motherfuckers never thought that sending a fucking beam through their brain was gonna be bad for them just so they wouldn't fucking have tangled cords. Like the only reason, right? And then I realized, holy fuck, it's gonna be washing our hands. They're gonna be, or no, shaking hands. And I already hear it's like these motherfuckers would wipe their asses and then say hello to each other with a hand they wipe their ass with and then eat their food. And they're all sick all the time. They're gonna find out like every cancer comes from shaking hands. Like it's gonna be so crazy when you think about how gross your hands are, right? And I've really been thinking about it. So that's what I think. And the next thing I thought was of the duck scene. There's a scene where they're swabbing the ducks. And then I thought, this is an alien abduction. We're just some creatures that appear out of nowhere with superior technology, capture all of them, like 100 of them, shove, literally probe their asses and send them back into the community. And you know, they're going back like, Steve, bro, I'm telling you, I was abducted. And they're like, shut up, Gary. In the V, like it's gonna be the same thing.
Yeah. I agree.
The washing the hands thing is that 100%, and also like yeah, the ear pods and I don't want to be like the cell phones give you cancer thing, but there's definitely gonna be a yeah. If you got a cell phone at 6 and it's been glued to your head for 50 years, yeah, it turns out that's just not good for you.
Turns out you've having tiny strokes every day for your whole life.
Right. I mean, they'll also just judge us for like the food we eat. Be like, these guys would order 5 gallons of cheese balls, sit there in front of a movie, and just put air, fake cheese, and like this doughy thing into their face. And that was a great day.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, yeah, we still eat salt and sugar.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, it's some of the shit we already know.
They're gonna be like,
well, at least when they were doing the bleeding, they thought like they didn't know it was wrong. Yeah, Joe's 100% right. Like you go to McDonald's, you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
There's a, you made that choice.
There's a weird logic to all your blood sucks, so we're gonna take it out, and then you'll make new blood. You can see how you got there. You can see how someone could have gotten there.
Yeah, Bill and I have been watching this murder mystery show that's set in like early 20th century Toronto, and the city coroner, she like goes in the morgue and there's no gloves. She's just like picking out people's brains and like doing these like, you know, postmortems, and like just kind of like and then goes and shakes hands with people and like just kind of like shakes it off and walks away. Great.
Yeah. 15 years before the Spanish flu outbreak.
Yeah, wipes on her apron, right?
Yeah.
Just so they just when they just threw a sheet on a corpse and just left it in the open air.
What's just funny is
if you don't look at it, you won't get sick.
What's funny is like so much of that stuff, like medical coroners are still kind of like not really like there's a lot of them who aren't qualified to do it, who do it. Like a lot of that is still like super wacky. It's really sad. Like a lot of this shit like that we know, we still just like, you know, that's somebody else's problem. Like, fuck it, who cares? Like, ultimately. But, like, there's a lot of stories you could read about how medical, like, there are current people who do medical coroners for cities and they have no qualifications to do the job.
Ouch.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Are they hiring?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the college is closed. Job. I'm in. Yeah.
It's gonna be about to be a run on coroners too.
Oh, too soon.
Whatever, I think it's there.
Actually, because it hasn't happened yet. Like you're getting way too early, man.
Yeah. All right, guys. Any last words? How about this? To close off, what are you? I don't know. Let's call it binging. To spend your time. How are you spending your time? Because obviously you have a lot of, I presume, new hours to do what you want. It's weird for me because, like, up until literally tonight, I would have been out of work anyway recovering. I'd go back to work tomorrow. So I've actually been not doing much online work. But what have you been doing? What are you planning on doing? How are you keeping sane? Or even some advice or recommendations to people at home so we don't end up such a bummer.
We've put together, we almost finished it, Bill and I before you called, but we're still a little few pieces short. We're almost done with our puzzle that we started 3 days ago.
Yeah.
But we only have two puzzles for this pandemic. We didn't stock up, and we finished this one in like 3 days. So that's a problem. We need to like pace ourselves. But it's a great puzzle.
I just bought a Spider-Man puzzle.
Nice. How many pieces?
500.
Oh, that's not nearly enough.
I do it alone, though. My wife hates puzzles. My wife hates puzzles the way my dog hates fetch. Like, if you throw a frisbee, I shout out to Kami, who turned 16 on Sunday. I throw a frisbee, and she's like, why should I get it? You threw it. So when she looks at it, my wife looks at a puzzle like, I didn't break this. Why should I fix it? So I'm on my own with the 500-piece puzzle.
All right.
Oh. What would you use, 1,000?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if I had a partner, I'd be doing 1,000-piece puzzles.
It's great. It's been great. We have not fought over it too much, I think.
I started rereading the Usagi Yojimbo saga, The Bunny Samurai. It's fucking great. And I've been playing copious amount of Marvel's, Marvel Unlimited Alliance, whatever it's called? Ultimate Alliance. Switch.
Okay.
Yeah. Because a beat 'em up mindless game is exactly what I need right now.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to work, so my life hasn't changed that much. The biggest change is that there's no sports because that's literally the only TV I watch. So my plan is to listen to every album that I have in my iTunes. It says I have 38 days worth of music, and some of this shit I've never listened to before. So I'm gonna try to listen to everything in my music collection online, and then also listen to a bunch of records. But that's probably my biggest thing.
If you want to give me a playlist, that could be a mini pod. We could just like do some music reviews.
Oh man, I've already made one for the pandemic.
A pandemic playlist?
Yeah, I did, but it's all Animal Collective, so it's too much. But I'll make another one that'll be more friendly for you.
All right. Can iTunes export to Spotify?
Probably. I could just download it as just a regular playlist file, like what you can use in WinApp.
Okay.
And then you should probably be able to load that.
All right, let me know.
Yeah.
Okay, Bill wouldn't let me make this joke, but I'm going to make it anyway. I think the soundtrack should be by the Foo Fighters.
Done.
The playlist should be called the Foo Fighters?
Oh, never mind. I botched it. My delivery is awful.
Uh-oh. Told you so.
I
feel like I missed out.
No, it was just... It was a terrible joke. Never mind.
Oh, what could be the theme song for this episode? But all right, guys. Well, this is fun.
Y'all stay safe out there.
Yeah.
Or y'all stay safe in there.
Or in there. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Peace out, guys.
Bye. When I became the sun, I shone life into the man's heart. When I became the sun, I shone life into the